Bonjour du Québec, les amis, ici The Baron Ragnarok, et je vous souhaite un excellent épisode de Gilcast, the best podcast ever. Every time I get up off the ground, something's knocking me down. When I think I've paid my dues, I still got these hard times.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the 76th episode of Guildcast for July 15th, 2007. I'm your host, Sean. In this episode, we're going to discuss the topic of vanquishing tactics with a great news segment by Lady Sinea, a ritualist spirit warrior build segment by Dropwork, the Back to the Basics segment from Big Daddy Goose, and a really cool TeamSpeak recording done by Greg, who we heard from a few episodes back. He and his guildies got together to talk about some vanquishing tactics of their own, and I think they did a pretty good job of going through a lot of the ins and outs of it. Now, this episode idea was originally suggested to me by the Shadow Twinkie, who I know I think I've named him before on the show. First, the people who asked to be mentioned this week include Embrace the Eternal, Vinko Bondage, I'ma Fire You Up. Wait, let me read that again, because you got to have some feeling in that. I'm going to fire you up. There we go. Yugal of the Hills, Conbro of Ascalon, and Dren M. Also, I wanted to thank everyone who has given me ale for my drunkard title. I haven't been aggressively pursuing the title like I really should, but I've been working on it here and there, you know, between missions, while I'm getting ready for work, and even sometimes during missions. But right now, I'm up to about 915 minutes as of right now, so I'm almost there. A few more. And as for the news this week, there actually is a ton, mostly concerning Eye of the North. If you listen to the last episode where I talked about Eye of the North, I kind of discussed the rumors and the speculation going around about the expansion. And I didn't have a lot of solid evidence of a date, like a release date or a price or anything like that. Well, ironically enough, as if on cue, there was a press release literally hours after the release of that last show. And in this press release, they give some more detailed info on the expansion, including the release date and the price. Well, in Lady Sinea's segment this week, she talks about much of this news. So instead of playing her segment toward the end of the show, which is what I usually do, because, you know, I save the best for last and all, I'm actually going to play her segment right now after these voicemails I got.
Hello, Scott. This is Sally Scrooge, a.k.a. Shellblock. In the Archangels Guild, I've called in before under Salius Grode. This is, in fact, Salius Grode. Just to let you guys know, it's a great show, and Lady Sinea, you got an awesome voice. Anyways, yeah, Sean, you're pretty cool, and love the site, keep the good work, love the show, thanks, bye. Or wait a minute, before I go, I have a podcast of my own for World of Warcraft. This is totally off topic, but yeah. Capital HORDECAST and iTunes music store. Leave reviews, subscribe. Thank you. Bye.
Hi, this is My Blade Sharp once again with an update on my contest. Now, it has been some weeks since the last update, as you probably have noticed, so I have had some time to think about the other prizes. Or prize, the third place prize. The third place is going to be a choice between two golds that I have, and then actually I'm going to have a fourth place for the other gold. I don't really know. I think they have nice skins. I'm not that really in the know-how when it comes to that. But, yeah. Once again, this has been an update from My Blade is Sharp. Thanks, Sean. Love the show. Bye.
Hey, my in-game name is Tim Hamby, and I have a question. Eye of the North, I heard that we can incorporate our characters from Nightfall Factions and Prophecies into it. Is that true?
Thank you. Hey all, this is Lady Sinea bringing you the word on the street. Can you believe how long it's been since Factions came out? Okay, this is how long it's been. I have a writ that I use as a mule, and while I was getting some victory tokens out of his inventory last week, I noticed that he had a birthday present. I was like, whoa, my writ is a whole year old? I can't believe we've been playing this game for that long and we still love it. But anyway, let's see. I've got some names here to mention, most of whom had something to do with giving me or selling me sugar items. They are Shadowmaster Nevik, Red Hot Chili Pepper, Jackpot James, Priam the Grim, Knight of Aphrodite, Arrowin of Wood, Eye Slicer, Legendary Fury, Soul's Eye, Anya Sky, or more affectionately known as Bob, and some other that shall remain unnamed. And by the way, the title is coming along great. With the recent festival, I'm upwards of 7k points now, and with the cupcakes and candy canes and stuff that I haven't eaten yet, I'm probably close to about 8,000. So, woohoo, this is going to be my 10th title, and I know that there are many other people out there who are very important and rather more special than I am, but soon people will know me. Soon. Mwahaha. Now, I know that Sean already told you that we had fun in San Francisco, but I wanted to say it too, so we had fun! Thanks to everybody who did make it out there and made it a great get-together. We were totally geeky, and some people, they had DP from standing out in the cold, so I popped into one of the candy stores along the wharf and got everyone some wintergreen candy canes. Thank you to Bartaman Pie for giving me that awesome idea. I learned a lot from meeting everyone. I learned that Sean sunburns easily, that Sarah should probably be the unofficial Guildcast groupie, that everyone looks a whole lot shorter when you sit on Frigg's shoulders, that power leveling noobs, or in other words, giving Ashdy's kids piggyback rides, can be highly entertaining, that even if the Baron of Brains makes cookies, eating them will not count towards the sugar title. That you probably shouldn't talk to Ashdy for very long, unless you want your face and your stomach and everything else to just ache from laughing so hard, even if all the jokes are at your expense. And, of course, we already knew, but I learned that Cal is a noob. Overall, though, I really hope that everyone found out that we're just normal people, like you. Okay, well, not totally normal, but you know what I mean. We also took pictures, and I put one of Sean and me up on the Guildcast wiki under the entry for, lo and behold, Guildcast. So yeah, if you want to see a picture of the Guildcast team actually standing next to each other, go to the site there, because it's probably not going to happen again for quite a while. Now onwards with the news. Lots has happened, even since Sean's last episode, but I want to back up a little bit farther than that. In June, we were introduced to new Sunspear and Krizik Luxon skills. The Krizik and Luxon titles were also changed a bit, as well as how much credit you gain from the different ways that you turn your faction in. Here's what the update on the 15th originally said. Exchanging faction points for Amber or Jade now gives progress towards these titles. Exchanging faction points for Krizik Luxon skills will also give progress toward these titles. Too bad these aren't retroactive. If I recall correctly, when you used to look at how much faction you had gained before, it would tell you, you've redeemed blah amount of the total X amount that you have earned on this account. And I thought, hey, well, they used to keep track of how much faction you had actually spent, whether it be for donation or trade-in for Amber or Jade, so why couldn't it be retroactive and they could just plug in those numbers into your current title? Did they just stop keeping track of that information? But then, 3 days later, they added this. Using the Raise Alliance Reputation option with the Krizik Luxon Faction Reward NPCs now gives 10,000 points toward the corresponding title track. The cost is still 5,000 faction points, and the reputation gained by the Alliance is still 5,000. So, that throws a monkey wrench into the works. I'm sure that they could look at everyone's title and see how much faction was spent and how high their old friend titles were, but that's probably, like, way more trouble than it's worth. So, unfortunately, for all of those faction farmers who did lots of donations, You don't get the double bonus retroactively, but I guess you'll get it from now on. Also, for PvEers who aren't into ABing or fast faction farming or whatnot, they've added, the blessing provided by Kurzik and Luxian Shrine Priests now gives progress toward these titles for kills earned while under the blessing's effects. So, that's kind of cool. It's like a bounty when you go into those areas in Kantha, so you can go faction farm and hunt at the same time. Okay, moving on. Eye of the North. We now have a release date of August 31st. That's not too far away, and many of us were wondering if there were going to be any preview events. I'm rather certain that there won't be any PvP preview, because I always saw those as just a way to introduce you to new professions, which, obviously, there are none in Eye of the North. But if they do have some kind of preview for us, I do hope that they give us some kind of benefit, like we're able to get in there first and start progressing before the actual release of the game, and not wipe the slate clean on release date. Being an expansion, I think it's only fitting that, say, people who pre-order it or people who buy it from the online store get a day head start or something like that as an incentive using our existing characters. And oh yes, the online store. Yeah, so if you're a longtime Guildcast listener, you remember that I did eventually take back what I said about not wanting to buy anything from the online store. And I'm even going to do a full flip here and support it. They announced something called a bonus mission pack promotion, in which if you spend $30 in the online store during a certain time period, I think it's like from now to the end of October, then you get a special mission pack. It says, the Guild Wars bonus mission pack will allow you to play through 4 pivotal moments in Guild Wars history. Earn unique rewards as you go face-to-face with Palawa Joko and his undead army as one of the key figures in the Battle of Jahai. Experience part of Kantha's turbulent past as you witness the violent Tengu Wars. Learn firsthand how the White Mantle rose to power in Kryta. And finally, discover what became of Gwen after the Char invaded her home and the Searing destroyed everything she'd ever known. So, this has kind of caused a debate between people who don't want to purchase anything from the online store, because that looks like the only way that you're going to be able to get your hands into these bonus missions. Some people are saying, you know, hey, I was planning on buying a few character slots anyway, so this just gives me a reason to do so, which is great. It's like a promotion to get people to buy stuff. On the other hand, there are people who are up in arms about it, saying they don't want to purchase from the online store and things like that. Fortunately, you don't have to buy anything that you don't actually need. Like, you don't have to go buy 3 character slots. Because this promotion is not so coincidentally coinciding with the release of Eye of the North. I am actually among those who like to go to a store and buy a physical copy of the game. Some months ago, when I finally got into Dungeon Runners and I wanted to add it to my PlayNC account, I totally didn't remember my password, but I was able to produce all of the CD keys of my Guild Wars games because I had all of the boxes, and they were able to help me reset my password, so having the actual discs on hand was very valuable. But, you know, I'm not the only one who likes the tangible stuff, and it's not just games. You know, I like to go to the store and I buy CDs. And whether I'm going to, you know, put it on an MP3 player or not, I always have that physical CD as proof that I bought the thing. Whether my computer crashes and dies and loses all my info or anything, I've got a CD. But, you know, when it comes to games, lots of games come with great color manuals, sometimes maps and other goodies. And, you know, even if they didn't, I don't know, some people would rather, you know, get rid of all their extra boxes. They don't want to have them lying around. But I keep all of mine. And then if I ever, like, sell or trade, like, old CDs later, I have a nice box to put the game disc in. But on the business end, I can see why it would be good to give incentive to players to buy the game direct from the company. You eliminate the middleman. You also cut the costs of packaging, shipping, etc. And if the information I'm getting is correct, The expected retail cost of Eye of the North is $40. That's USD. The site says 35 in Europe, and I have an Australian guildie who is telling me that his local store is telling him 50 AUD, which seems kind of high to me, but he says it's still a lot cheaper than the full campaigns when they were released. So now, if ArenaNet and NCSoft are smart, they'll drop the price in the online store by like $5, so that there's actually a monetary incentive to buy direct from them. With that said, I will likely buy Eye of the North from the online store for the bonus pack, unless there's some like massively better deal at my local retailer. As for the game itself, have you seen the new videos that have been released? Okay, wow. I really was not very excited about Eye of the North before, but I really am now. Okay, so there are some of the expected things, like they have some new lighting effects to make things prettier, of course, and we expect that, because Guild Wars is definitely known for being gorgeous. If it wasn't, I would be, you know, upset and say what happened to the old artists and designers. But they've also got this dynamic music thing, where it'll recognize when you go into battle, and the music will pick up. Or it'll have different music when you hit a boss battle. And apparently, it'll also have a different kind of music if you're, like, hopelessly outnumbered. So that's kind of cool. I was much more enthusiastic, though, when I heard the classic soundtrack right outside in the snowy region during that demonstration. And I was like, yeah, baby, we're going home! We're also going to see the continent of Ore. I can't wait to play through Ore. I saw that and was like, oh, yeah, now that is the that I've been waiting for. So yeah, I'm actually excited about this game. I'm really happy with the way that they're focusing a lot on making sure that the existing players are getting their money's worth, and that we're not going to be shafted by the introduction of Guild Wars 2. It looks like they definitely know that, obviously, since we've been here this long, we're in it for the long haul, and we'll remain customers so long as they keep us happy. And from what I've seen of Eye of the North so far, yeah, I think I'm going to be happy. This has been Lady Sinea bringing you the word on the street.
So you want to be a vanquisher, but you're not sure where to start, or what exactly you're getting yourself into. Or maybe you dove into some vanquishing, figuring you'd start out in, you know, maybe one of the lower level areas like Old Ascalon, but then you got your butt handed to you by some gargoyles. Well, let me help you out a little bit then. First, let me explain what vanquishing is. Vanquishing is when you clear out an entire explorable area from zone to zone and every single corner in between in hard mode. Now, to even be able to do this, you must have beaten the campaign in which you wish to vanquish, as I've talked about before with other hard mode topics that I've done. So why on Tyria would someone want to go through the same areas they've already cleared out before, but with harder foes? Well, there's not only the challenge, but there's also, at the end of vanquishing an area, you get the experience equivalent to 5 times the number of creatures killed, and you get the gold equal to 3 times the number of creatures killed. Not only this, you can work towards your vanquishing related titles as well as work on your other titles at the same time, which I'll go into a little bit more later. Alright, Sean, we got it. So you go through these same landscapes, killing the same monsters, but with higher level, right? You get tons of loot and experience for it. Well, let's get going. Well, wait, I'm not really done yet. Rushing into vanquishing without knowing what you're doing can prove a giant waste of time, which will probably turn you off to vanquishing altogether. But hey, that's why I'm here. I want to make sure that you are well prepared and you realize how fun and rewarding vanquishing can be. So let's start off with the prestige rewards of vanquishing, which lies in the titles. Each time you vanquish an explorable area of a certain chapter's map, you get a point towards your vanquisher title of that chapter. There's Tyrian, Canthan, and Alonian Vanquisher titles. All of these titles, when completed, count towards your kind of a big deal title track. But also, when you vanquish all areas of all 3 chapters, you get the title of Legendary Vanquisher, which also counts towards the kind of a big deal title track. Now, along with these titles, it's very wise to work on other titles in the process. Most obviously, there's the cartographer titles, which, you know, you scrape the walls while you're looking for that last monster to kill in the area, and you'll get your higher percentage of cartographer title. Also, it'd be wise to take the shrine bounties for the increased Sunspear and Lightbringer points to work on those titles as well. And there's also the Kurzik and Luxon areas of factions that you can, if you clear those out and you get the Priest's Blessing, you'll get points towards your Friend of the Kurzik's or Friend of the Luxon's titles. Also, another great idea would be to plan out your areas as to which boss you'll encounter and bring a capture signet to work on your skill titles for those bosses that you may come across during your vanquishing. So if you can plan well enough, you can be pretty efficient with working on many titles at once while vanquishing. Okay, so I bet by now you're just itching to get started. So where do you start? A major mistake many people make is to start out in an earlier area of a chapter, thinking, well, if it was easier the first time through in normal mode, then it's got to be a nice place to start in hard mode also, right? Well, this isn't the case at all. The earlier areas of all three chapters have reduced party sizes that you have to keep into consideration, which means if you have a max party of 4 and you're trying to fight a group of level 24 or 28 monsters, then it would really be more of a challenge even to a party of 8. So you're pretty much guaranteed not to make it, unless, you know, of course you have a really good build and you really know what you're doing, but this is more for advice for beginners here. Plus, keep in mind that once your party reaches negative 60% death penalty in hard mode, you get shipped back to town. So don't mess around. So what I did when I first started vanquishing was I went and I started out in the areas with the least amount of enemies. If you look on guildwiki.org, there's a great little guide under vanquishing. If you just do a search for vanquish, they have this little guide. It has a list of all of the areas and the amount of monsters in each area needed to vanquish. So I started out in Scoundrel's Rise and Griffin's Mouth, which are both extremely easy to vanquish, especially Griffin's Mouth. They're just right next to each other, just outside of the Gates of Kryta in Prophecies. You might see the low number of enemies in Majesty's Rest also and think, well, that would be a breeze too, but just remember, there's a certain Bone Dragon with some friends of hers in that area that can prove very difficult in hard mode. And if you want to go the factions route, try Shadow's Passage, which is, it's just a cakewalk. There's only, like, not even, like, a dozen enemies in there. And another area on Xingjie Island called Shaosheng Trail, it looks to be easy because of the small number of enemies that you'll see, but it's actually a little bit difficult because of the nature of the enemies, being mostly healers and ritualists. And then in Alona, if you want to do it in Alona starting out, you have the Gandara, the Moon Fortress area, which is probably the easiest to start out with. And then, of course, once you've done these smaller, easier areas, you'll get the feel of how vanquishing works with the little counter up in the left-hand corner that shows just how many monsters you've killed so far. And also there's the monster AI, which is a little bit more sophisticated. They react differently to AoE spells and things like that, and they're just a little bit harder overall. And then after that, you know, after you get the feel for that, then you can move on to bigger and better things to vanquish. Now, while looking over this list on GuildWiki, you'll see that they show the minimum and maximum number of enemies needed to vanquish in each area. This takes things into consideration like pop-ups, which actually are avoidable and only count if you activate them. So if you know of a certain area with pop-ups, especially this happens a lot in Kryta, you can actually not aggro them. You cannot, you know, make them pop up, and they won't. You won't have to kill them for it to count for the vanquishing of that area. But if you do activate them and they do pop out, you can't just run away from them. You actually have to kill them to rightfully vanquish that area. And then also they have another factor that they take into consideration with this minimum maximum thing is quests that may increase or decrease the monsters. And then there's also just plain spawn randomness. You know, that also affects how many creatures are in your area. So that's why they have the minimum, the maximum, because it could be anywhere from in between those numbers. And those numbers are mostly from player experience. They're not any kind of official numbers. They're just player experience, they go in there and, you know, as everyone knows, anyone can edit a wiki. So when someone encounters a certain number, they put it in there. So take it with a grain of salt. Also, here's some vanquishing tips that I found. If you kill a tameable pet in an area, it will add to the counter for the current area, increasing the gold and experience reward, but they are not required to complete an area. Also, foes killing each other will also count towards the kill total for the area. The party does not actually have to kill everything firsthand. And vanquishing of a zone can be repeated as many times as you wish. It will remain marked in gold on the map, but the counter will be reset each time you enter the zone. And also, vanquishing while in worm form in Nightfall can make things much easier. Even though it's considered a high-level area, being in the worm really takes a lot of the pressure off of killing the monsters. Makes it a lot easier. There are also some known bug issues with vanquishing and hard mode. Defeating the last enemy of an area has caused some players' games to freeze and close. However, the credit for completing that area is logged in the Vanquisher title track. This was mostly a problem when hard mode was first released, but I believe most of these problems have been fixed by now anyway. And then there are also occasions where the only remaining enemies in the area are on the other side of a portal to the next zone, and they can't be reached without leaving the area. Unfortunately, these enemies are counted as part of the zone you're in, and you will not get your Vanquisher credit until they are all killed. Unless you can reach these enemies with spells like Necrotic Traversal or Shadow Walk or something like that, or you can pull them into your zone with a longbow, otherwise you will have to rezone and start over. Another possible way to pull them would be to flag your heroes or henchmen into aggro range of the enemies.
Greetings, guildies. Goose here. If you notice, I did not say extended guildies, because as of a few nights ago, I am now part of the Ramen Empire. Yay, fanfare and all that kind of stuff. It was a difficult decision, not because a guildcast listeners, the fine crew they are, it was a difficult decision to leave my former guild, the Tech Rangers. I've been with them for over 2 years now, and they're the best bunch of players I could ever hope to play with, and they're good friends of mine. They're such a supportive team. As some of you may know, I'm a very devoted Christian and father, and so sometimes in the middle of a mission, a critical point, I'd actually have to step away from the computer, and so I would tell my guildies, hey guys, I'm sorry, I need to go pray with my boys and put them down for bed. I'll be back in about 10-15 minutes. And the Tech Rangers are very supportive of that, would say, hey, Goose, go, do what you got to do. We'll be waiting for you. And 9 times out of 10, they'd sit there and they'd wait for me. And there's not many players or friends that you'd find that are willing to do that night after night. So they're just a great bunch of guys, and I'm going to still play the game with them. It's just become apparent recently that their desire for a guild and my desires for a guild are somewhat different, and so I decided to expand my horizons and look for other guilds. What better place to start than with the Guildcast listeners? So anyway, my first night in the Ramen Empire was very interesting. Not only did I break the world record for consecutive deaths in a mission, but the voice chatting system was a little interesting. Well, the only reason was that we had a bunch of people on the server that night, and it was very difficult to coordinate with each other because in the channel that we were in, everyone wanted to talk about something. And most of the time, it was not about the mission we were on. So it made it very difficult for us to coordinate and for us to get things straight about what we needed to do. This has happened to me a few times in my previous guild also. We'd find a few people that were logged on that would be talking about nothing in particular and just talking to hear themselves talk. Can't think of anyone I know like that. But it's very frustrating, especially when you're trying to accomplish something in the game. So I thought tonight would be a really good time to go back to basics regarding voice chatting. For those of you that don't know, the voice chatting software that I'm talking about is TeamSpeak, which the Roman Empire and the Guildcast listeners united use. There's also Ventrilo, which my former guild, the Tech Rangers, used. And I also hear tell that Skype can be used for team chatting, although it's not really designed for that. It's more designed for person-to-person phone calls. And although it can be done in conference mode, it's not ideal for a game setting. So TeamSpeak and Ventrilo are the two giants. Voice chatting software allows all the players to communicate more effectively, to organize more efficiently, and provides a less greater chance of misunderstandings. If you were to try to communicate through typing, not only would it leave you open for attack, but it would also be very frustrating to organize efficiently. If you have to type out details about exactly what everyone should do, you'd be typing for minutes, maybe an hour. That's not what you want to do in a game. You want to play a game. You don't want to type up an essay or a book report. So voice chatting software allows you to communicate much more effectively and efficiently. But unfortunately, voice chatting software can be hindered very easily. It can be hindered by excessive chatting. It can be hindered by people who are not paying attention. It can be hindered by misusing the system or not following rules that are set up. So it's important to establish strict yet simple rules for any voice chatting system. Now, these rules are usually set up by the guilds that host the voice chatting server. For example, TeamSpeak has a Guildcast listeners server. And so anyone in there must abide by the Alliance voice chatting rules. And I'm sure you can find them somewhere. Anyway, the Tech Rangers have a Ventrilo system. And so you log on to the Tech Rangers server through Ventrilo, you must abide by the Tech Rangers rules for voice chatting. So the rules for voice chatting are usually set up by the guild that hosts the server that you're going to be logging on to. Whether there are rules in place or not, there are some tips to follow for effective voice chatting. Number one, use the push-to-talk option. TeamSpeak allows you to activate your mic through two options, either push-to-talk or voice-activated. Voice activated means that as soon as a level of sound is registered by your microphone, the microphone will activate and will send whatever sound it's receiving out to the voice chatting software. But the push-to-talk option allows you greater control. Push-to-talk means you select a key on your keyboard or your mouse and assign that key to activate your microphone. When you push the key and hold it down, your microphone is activated and you can talk and the people on the server will hear you. When you release, your microphone becomes muted. They cannot hear you anymore. I use my middle mouse wheel button, push that button down. That's typically mouse button 3 in your software. I find that's very easy to control because I've always have my fingers on the mouse and it's just easy access. Ventrilo has a push-to-talk option by default. So push-to-talk is just going to allow you a greater control over what others are going to hear coming from you. If you don't use push-to-talk, then people are going to hear when your dog barks, when your kids come in asking for something, when your bird is being annoying in the background. I can't think of anyone that would be like that. So use the push-to-talk option. It's just going to allow you a greater flexibility and control over what people hear from you. Tip number two, ask people how you sound. Sometimes you might have a new microphone or a headset, or you might have to change your settings on your computer, or you might have a new sound card. You might have to uninstall, reinstall some software that's related to your voice chatting system. And logging on, you might not be aware that your voice is suddenly 10 decibels too high, or you can't be heard at all, and no one responds, not because you're boring, but because they can't hear you. So ask people how you sound occasionally. If you sound too high, too low, too scratchy, too annoying, too whiny, you know, just ask people how you sound. Tip number three, avoid unnecessary chatter. Now, this is extremely important because the whole purpose for voice chatting software is to communicate effectively. If you're in a channel and you're talking about nothing but the coolest movie around, Transformers, then the team can't talk about the next foe to take down or the next goal to accomplish or this threat or that threat. The team can't work well if it can't talk. And it can't talk if you're talking about Optimus Prime. So avoid unnecessary chatter. Please be aware of what you're talking about. And if it's not pertaining to what's important at the time being, please just avoid it. There's plenty of times to chat elsewhere. Tip number four. Don't pop in and out of the software just to see who's on. It's very distracting. It's very annoying. Whenever you log on to a voice chatting software like Ventrilo or TeamSpeak, the software announces your arrival. In TeamSpeak, it simply says new player or player connected. In Ventrilo, not only does it say there's a new player connected, but it uses a text-to-speech synthesizer which attempts to say your name that you've typed in. So if your name on the Ventrilo server is the greatest harbinger of death poodle that one can imagine, the server has to say that every single time you log in and out of a channel or log in and out of the server. It's distracting. Please, if you're going to go on to the voice chatting software, make a decision before you log on whether you're going to stay or not. If you're going to get on, stay on. Even if no one's there, just stay there. It's not harming you to be in an empty voice chatting channel. So please don't pop in and out of the software. And finally, tip number five, players really need to hold each other accountable when it comes to voice chatting behavior. If you know that the person who's talking right now is saying something he shouldn't be saying, if he's being rude or offensive, if he's too loud, too soft, you need to step up and say something. Stop him and say, hey, I'm sorry, dude, but we're trying to accomplish this quest right now. So can we hold off on this conversation until after? And if you are being held accountable, just be polite about it. Just say, you're right. I'm sorry. I shouldn't be talking about that. My bad. So please just hold each other accountable so that everyone benefits from the use of the voice chatting software. Voice chatting software is a great tool for players. It helps us stay organized. It helps us stay effective. And it helps us have a lot of fun in our favorite games. But use it wisely.
Hello everybody out there, this is Chris, or as you know me on the forums, Drawfork, or in-game as Elmer's All Purpose. I'm here to tell you a little bit about my favorite build, the Ritualist Warrior, Spirit Warrior. It's cheap to get started, and it's not that hard to use. I'll start out by telling you the armor you need, the weapons you need, the attributes, and finally the skills, then go into how to use the build. So, let's get started. For armor, you're going to need any max armor. Doesn't matter what it looks like, but I only have one requirement. Your headpiece must be spawning attribute. If it's not spawning, well, just get spawning. Now, you're going to need 4 Ghost Forge insignias, and you will put them where I tell you. Ready? You need one on your head, one on your arms, one on your leggings, and one on your shoes. Why not on your chest? Because you need to put a radiant insignia there. The radiant insignia will give you +3 energy when it's on your chest, which is good. You're going to need a superior spawning rune. You can put it on any piece of armor you desire, as well as the minor communing and minor restoration runes, a rune of vitae, and you have 2 choices on this one. You can either go with a superior vigor rune or a major vigor rune. I'd go with a superior vigor rune if you have the money, but if you don't, go with the major vigor rune. That's what I use. The cool kids use the major vigor rune. For weapons, you're going to need a max sword, either required 9 or 10. If you can get a 15 over 51, that would be just perfect. And you're going to need either a max or near max enchanting pommel. You can either have a zealous or vampiric hilt. You can go with an offhand of spawning that has half casting time or half spell recharge on spawning skills and plus 30 HP, or just your average shield with plus 30 HP. For your attributes, you're going to need to put 10 into swordsmanship, 6 into communing, 7 if you have the minor communing rune, 6 into restoration, 7 as well if you have the minor restoration rune, and 12 into spawning, 15 if you have the superior spawning rune. A list of skills in the order I have them on my bar. You can put them in any order you choose. First up, we have Final Thrust. Its cost is 10 adrenaline, and you'll lose all the adrenaline you have, and target foe is struck for plus 27 damage, or plus 54 damage if it is below 50% HP. Skill number 2 is Flurry. It costs 5 energy. It has a 5-second recharge. For 5 seconds, you attack 25% slower, but you deal 33% more damage. Skill number 3 is whatever you want for your interrupt skill. I use Savage Slash, which costs 10 energy, has a half-second cast time, and a 15-second recharge time. If it hits, you're going to interrupt the target foe's action, and if that action was a spell, you're going to deal 27 more damage. Skill number 4 for me is Wielder's Boon. It costs 5 energy, it has a 1/4-second casting time, and a 4-second recharge time. With this skill, you heal the target ally for 36 HP, and if that ally is under the effects of a weapon spell, they are healed for an additional 43 HP. Skill number 5 is Vital Weapon, your weapon spell. It costs 5 energy, it has a 1-second cast time, and a 2-second recharge. With it, for 29 seconds, target ally has plus 103 maximum HP. Next skill is Sight Beyond Sight. It costs 5 energy, has a 1/4-second casting time, and a 20-second recharge time. With it, for 21 seconds, you can't be blinded, which comes out to 24 seconds if you have a maximum enchanting pommel. Skill number 7 is Spirit Strength. It is a Nightfall Elite, and it is the basis for all the damage on this build. It costs 5 energy, has a 1-second cast time, and a 30-second recharge time. For 63 seconds, your attacks deal plus 37 damage while under the effects of a weapon spell, which comes out to 75.5 seconds if you have a 20% enchanting pommel. For skill number 8, you can go with any resurrection you choose. You can go with a resurrection signet, the Sun Sphere Rebirth signet, or Flesh of My Flesh. I'll switch between Sun Sphere Rebirth signet and Flesh of My Flesh depending on what I'm doing. It's up to you, though. Now, you have your skills, you have your armor, you have your weapons, and you have your attributes all lined out. Now you can start using this build. Before battle, you want to cast Spirit Strength and follow that up with Vital Weapon. Now, before battle, I don't mean a couple minutes before or when you see some little red dots on the horizon. I mean maybe 2 seconds before you run in there. Last minute is always good. Now, when you start attacking, spam Flurry as much as you can. You're going to want to keep Flurry on you at all times if you want to do optimum damage with this build. Use Savage Slash whenever needed. It works really good when you need to interrupt anything, really. You're going to want to use Final Thrust when your target gets below 50% HP. I know, it's really tempting to just press that button when the skill lights up, but come on, patience. You know, when your target's at 1/4 HP is optimum, because if you use Final Thrust, then follow up by spamming Flurry again, your target's going to be dead in no time. That's pretty much it for this build. Like I said, it's really easy to use. Only cost me about 25-30k to get mine started, which is the most I've ever had. I hope you enjoyed my segment, and I hope you'll try out this build. See y'all later.
Okay, we'll just get underway so that you guys can get back to your oh-so-important Tyrion business.
I said it was important.
Okay, so just generally, let's have everybody introduce themselves.
Hi, my name is Lady Talasia, and I'm addicted to Guild Wars.
Hi, Lady Talasia. Hi, I'm playing Katara Isisir, and I'm Fuid Shira's secret agents.
Hello, my name is Kitmithy, and I'm an officer of Shira's secret agents.
I am Zen Ryuga, of Shiro's secret agents.
And we're basically here tonight because we're going to talk a little bit about vanquishing, because as a guild, we've been kind of on-again, off-again, hitting different areas. So let's just start with the very basic of questions. Since the introduction of hard mode and since vanquishing has come into existence, do you like it or do you hate it?
I like it. It's probably renewed my interest in the game. I also like it. It adds another level of challenge because the monsters aren't just kind of like, oh, Humpty Dumpty Doo, we're traveling along. Oh, hey, look, there's a party of people coming along. Instead, in hard mode, it's like, you know, oh, people, let's kill them. Because they're faster, they have quicker recharge times, and if you're not prepared, it's party wipe in less than 10 seconds. Okay, maybe 15. But also the loot is more lucrative. Even just by attempting to vanquish an area, even if you don't succeed, but you get, you know, even halfway to three-quarters of the way there, the value of the loot's greater, and I really hate the Naga on Xingjie Island. Yep.
I like it because I think it reinvented a lot of things in the game, because before there were a lot of areas, especially in Tyria, that you could pass up. You know, you would fly through the missions, you wouldn't even touch these areas. But with vanquishing, you have a reason to actually go out and actually explore where there's some reward other than, you know, some measly gold here or there for killing low-level enemies.
It's funny because the noob islands, you know, the Xingjie one and the other one, it makes them so much harder than the rest of the game because you can only go in hard mode with four people. So it's like twice as hard.
For me, it's a little bit of a mixed bag. Like, I'm happy about it because there was a lot of titles I was working towards, especially Sunspear, that weren't available until hard mode and vanquishing came out. So I was like, yeah, now I can reach these things again. But then the other side of me was like, God, I so can't do this alone, because I tend to do a lot of missions and stuff alone. So it really forced me into playing with everybody else, which was a lot of fun and I really enjoy. So it's made it a very well-balanced challenge to go through, and I really enjoy that.
I do agree with the titles, because for some people, they have titles scattered across characters because they really don't care. It's like, oh, titles, whatever. But in the case with me, I have all my titles on my Necro. So if I, you know, for the cartographer and the vanquishing, they go hand in hand. And if I need to just, you know, grind and do like the Sunspear Lightbringer points, I can do that.
So this leads around to an interesting question. Of the three continents, which one do you feel is the easiest to vanquish, and which one is the hardest?
Well, I'm not sure I could say as to which continents are harder. I think it's more like areas within the continents are harder. There's some areas in Alona. I can't remember the name of the place, but it has like a group of rampaging Nataka, which is just impossible to get, and I'm struggling with that one. But, you know, there's also like easy areas to go through in Alona.
I kind of feel the same way. It's kind of hard to say because there are so many really difficult areas, and then there's so many, you know, moderate areas that you can get through just fine.
See, and I kind of feel like Alona is a little bit easier than Kantha is to vanquish, just because vanquishing seems a little bit more geared towards Alona. So there's certain areas like the Sulphurous Wastes where you hop in a worm and it's relatively easy to go through, where when you get into Kantha and you start going through some of the districts, or even like Takanai Temple, is really hard to do because it's kind of been like amped up so much more in order to make it a challenge, which I enjoy, but it just seems a little harder overall.
I think it's more that certain builds are more conducive to certain continents. For example, dervishes, which have like much more immunity to like earth damage and stuff, do much better in Alona, but in Kantha, where they're getting poisoned, you have all the afflicted running around, it's probably harder for you.
I think it's interesting because when factions first came out, at least for me and the people that I played with, the challenge level between Tyria and Kantha was so different. You know, just the way that the missions and the gameplay was set up and the boundaries that you had to cross, you know, the groups of enemies, the composition of enemies, was so much different than Tyria, to where in Tyria, It was pretty much just, you know, you have your slew of enemies, just wipe through them, while Cantha is a little more strategic, if you know what I mean. So that, I think, you know, it does play a role in vanquishing, because when you up the difficulty level of everything and make those things even tougher, did they actually go through and, you know, redo all of Tyria and make it tougher, or, you know, did they just add the skills? You know, Kanta's already got that up difficulty rating, and Alona's kind of got that too, but, you know, like you said, a lot of the areas have the worms and all that.
What Zen was saying is true. Some areas seem better geared for it, whereas other areas, it's, I don't know, I haven't really done too much vanquishing and prophecies because I'm trying to do it one at a time, so I'm not all over the place. I've been starting with factions first, and I've, you know, just going through, I mean, there was a couple areas I could do by myself. It was like Tsinghua Vale. I was able to go through slowly, and with just a little party of four, go through, take the groups on, you know, one at a time, so it's not like, oh, aggro fest. But I actually had a better time in actually the later stages, and I guess it's because of the party limit, you know, from Xingjie Monastery all the way west, you know, it's party size of four. However, once you hit Seitang Harbor, it increases to six, and it's got the same, you know, party limit of six at Zendai Jun, whereas once you hit the mainland, you know, it's a party of eight. So even if it's four people, you can each bring a hero. You can kind of, you have more room to experiment with, okay, you know, we have, you know, one area where there's going to be a lot of conditions because there's afflicted. You know, there's another area where we're going to be facing both, a lot of conditions and hexes. And you have to kind of take the area into consideration. And I think with the beginning area, it's much harder because with the beginning areas, because it's like, okay, you know, we have, you know, Naga that are really fast and a small space to do it in, but only four people or four people plus 10 minions. It's more of a challenge, I think, in the beginning island as opposed to the main continent.
So with vanquishing, it added a lot of things. It added, like, the ability to reach titles. It added lockpicks and chests. It added much harder creatures and characters to take on a bigger challenge. Groups that aggro a lot easier, so you now have aggro fest. The coupling of being able to kill along with mapping, so you can now put cartographer together. Of all of kind of the things that were added, can you pinpoint one aspect of vanquishing that you enjoy the most?
The booty. It's just so much better. I've gotten so many good things from drops and chests and everything else by wandering around in hard mode. I've never really been one for farming, you know, I don't like the grind, the tediousness of it, so it's like I can go out in hard mode and make like 4 or 5K.
I'm finding the same thing too. It's like I used to go out with groups and it's like everybody else would get, you know, the rare and the very rare drops, and I'd just sort of be like, now I know that if I go out with a group and I at least bring a lockpick with me, I'm almost guaranteed to get a very rare drop, which has made certain aspects of detailing things that I don't have already much easier.
I think it's the sense of completion that really gets it for me, completing a challenge. Because when I first started playing Guild Wars, I mean, way back before they implemented hard mode, you know, I thought Napwee Quarter was hard. I had so much trouble with it, but then showed me, oh, you can just take this shortcut here, kind of cut out some of the fights, and you cut off about 10 minutes. Oh, okay. And it just from the things that I've learned from handling, okay, endless, and you know, what seems like endless amounts of enemies, some areas, it's just knowing and just like the excitement and the challenge, like, oh, are we going to wipe? Because they added the, I guess another parameter with hard mode. If everyone reaches the 60% maximum for the death penalty, that didn't sound right, but if you reach maximum death penalty from dying too much, you know, once everyone tops out, you get sent back to town. You can't continue. You don't keep resurrecting at the nearest res shrine. So being able to complete an area, just the challenge, because I take my necro through and having 10 angry minions, you know, it's like if the necromancer dies, you know, the minion master dies, and they had 10 minions, that's 10 minions gone wild. So in addition to fighting, you know, very fast angry monsters, you know, all around you, it's all of a sudden you have, on top of that, angry minions that may or may not explode or cause bleeding or what have you. So it's definitely the challenge, you know, can I stay alive? You know, can we pull through with no deaths, or maybe one or two here and there? That sort of thing is what really makes hard mode, I guess, exciting and fun for me. Not so much the loot, because loot is loot. It's definitely the challenge.
Generally speaking, I think the rewards are what it's all about, for me especially. For the sake of conversation, to compare this kind of game with other games, you know, they kind of have a repetitious nature, so they add in different difficulties, you know, easy, hard, and, you know, the rewards get better while the challenge increases. And before then, before Vanquishing, before Hard Mode, Guild Wars didn't have that. I think adding it really added something to it, because you're not just taking a character through titles, through each campaign, and then just kind of leaving it there, going and doing PvP, helping other people. Now you can go and redo things. Now you can just go and just kill stuff. You can just go and hack and slash for fun. And it's not as fast. It's more time-consuming. It just gives more people to do, and there's a reason to do it. There's many reasons, you know, the rewards, the experience, the titles, and all that.
Well, I think that's a good point, too, in that if you look at something like Diablo 2, it already was preset with, okay, here's a normal mode when you finish it, here's a harder mode when you finish it, here's the hardest mode. So everyone was kind of working to get to the hardest mode. I think by not having it initially, everybody appreciated it so much more when it was introduced, because it was like, oh, this was the harder level we were looking for, and yes, we really do want it, where they now had the option to kind of say, oh, we could do it, or we could focus on some other things. So I think players appreciated the hard mode more when it came out.
It was like that with Phantasy Star Online. That was a big part of the gameplay, was reaching certain levels to get to that next, you know, difficulty, because in those new difficulties, there were just amazing items to get, you know, that would just completely restock your entire arsenal. And it was such a huge incentive, and I was really glad to see that coming to Guild Wars.
So what part of Vanquishing do you hate?
That you really need a full and very balanced team to get through an area. I mean, it's a lot harder to take heroes through it. I find that if you go in with a really full and well-thought-out team, you fly through the area. But, I mean, it's kind of tough to get that team together, you know, because especially for smaller guilds, you just don't always have a monk on hand. And, you know, that's kind of necessary for getting through these areas.
I definitely agree with the sentiment that you have to have, I mean, even though you get to the areas where you have the party size of 8, you still have to have, you know, you still have to have your monk that does the straight healing, your monk that removes conditions from you. You need to have someone who can nuke your elementalist, you know, your rangers, if you want to add some long-distance damage. I mean, that part's tricky, and unless, you know, you set aside a time where either within your guild or your alliance you can do that, sometimes you might find yourself going, gee, you know, I keep trying to do this with either heroes and henchmen or with another person with just heroes, and it's not really working out. That can be discouraging, is not having people, a full team to go with. But the thing that gets me the most is death penalty. I mean, I understand why it's there, but it always seems like I'm always the first to die, if anyone remembers that song. But the 60% death penalty, especially, you know, once you hit a certain point where it's like, oh, you could have saved, but you made a couple errors in judgment, and it's just a downhill thing. It's a necessary element for hard mode, because you shouldn't be able to run around at 60% death penalty. It's fruitless at that point, after you've died so many times, no one has any candy canes or anything like that. But it is frustrating, the death penalty aspect, but, I mean, it's a necessary evil, too.
See, and I even find, like, once I've died the first time, it's just a quick downward spiral to get into 60, so once you're there, that's it. I mean, sometimes you can recover back from 15, but if you die a second time before even getting below 10, it just, don't even bother, just back it out and try it over. And I think for me, the thing that I find really frustrating, it's a good frustration, though, is time. You need to commit an hour or sometimes 2 hours to vanquishing an area and have the team completely on board for that time frame. Sometimes you run into groups where the person gets in and after 45 minutes is like, oh, I've got to go. Or you just get through an area, you spend an hour and a half, and then you get to that last group, and it's the large aggro group that just decimates everybody. And so you sometimes have a feeling of, my God, I just wasted an hour and a half of my life. But then you look at the loot, and you're like, okay, I got good loot for the hour and a half. But time becomes this very interesting factor that it seems like if you can commit the time to do it, it's very beneficial, but you might also get frustrated because if you die at the end of that time and don't vanquish the area, you're like, oh God, time lost.
Time is definitely the big for me, because I'm very busy, and I don't want to spend all that time vanquishing an area, but I understand that there's kind of limits to the design, you know, because they can't really have some kind of save feature for the kind of, you know, for each area that you want to vanquish, you know, oh, well, you vanquished this group and that group and this group, you know, so it's kind of a problem with the system itself, which is fine. But yeah, I definitely think that time is just something that I don't have and something that you need to really get into this and really finish everything. And
okay, it's just moving on to the last question, which is basically if you're going to talk to someone who's going to start vanquishing for the first time or give hard mode a try, what would you suggest for the goal of vanquishing an area?
Well, the first thing I would tell them is that make sure your build is good and your build is appropriate for the area that you're going into, just to sort of maybe do a test run and see what monsters are out there, because you're going to have to adjust your build for each area that you go into depending upon the monsters that are there, and just to be responsive to that. Also, to work within a team, so if somebody tells you, for example, if you're playing an elementalist and your SS says, you know, get rid of Firestorm, get rid of it, don't have an argument about it, because, you know, this is a team thing and you got to work within the team. Those are the two things that I'd probably tell people to do before they start it.
For as far as the, you know, just getting into it, I mean, yeah, you have to, I mean, you do have to be open-minded to builds and whatnot, to changing and adjusting, you know, going with the flow of not only the group, but the kind of environment you're going to be going into. You also should play with different builds and be comfortable with those builds, because if you're not comfortable running something, you'll be prone to make mistakes. Like, you'll keep throwing on enchantments instead of letting them run their course. You really should be comfortable with what kind of build you're working. You should also be comfortable with the people that you're going to be grouping with. You should know the dynamic of your group, and you should, you know, be able to work with them. So when they say, hey, you know, could you change this with your build before you go in, or even when you're in, and they ask you, hey, you know, can you pull, or, you know, if you happen to be a necro that's acting as some sort of battery, you know, can you remember to, you know, to bib these people in this priority? You should be able to go with it and to adjust and change as necessary, because you can set a plan, but even the best plans sometimes evolve or break, and you have to go with the changes that occur. And if also, I mean, be patient, because you may not vanquish an area the first time through. It is a constant learning experience. You know, be open-minded, be flexible, be patient. You need lots of patience.
That's pretty much my big one as well, too, is that you just need to be patient and take the time. You're going to do a lot more pulling of groups and a lot more pulling of individual creatures in order to get through the area easily, and even if it's a very simple area that in normal mode you just banged through it, ran, and destroyed, this is hard mode. This is vanquishing. It's going to be very tedious at times. Just be patient, pull them off, take your time, and just get it done. And eventually, it will get done.
My advice is be cautious, and if possible, read up on the area that you want to vanquish as much as possible. And if you can't, or, you know, even if you just want practice, check out the area. Check out the different kinds of groups. Check out what they use and how they use it. You know, you don't want to get caught off guard by some ritualist using Wanderlust and your entire team gets wiped out, if that's possible. But, yeah.
It is
be cautious. Yeah. Yeah, but you want to be cautious. You want to know what's coming after you so that you know what to bring, so that you're prepared and you can tackle the challenge that's ahead of you.
Okay, last thoughts. Does anybody have any good vanquishing stories?
There was this time we were all taken out by a ritualist using Wanderlust. Seriously, I guess one of the best is just, you know, the trial and error sometimes works too. I was stuck trying to get through Boreas Seabed, which is, you know, a not that hard mission, but I just kept getting wiped out. And then, you know, somebody hit upon the idea of using Winter and then Mantra of Frost, and it got us through it. And that's the other thing, is just sort of think outside the box and be creative when you're coming up with teams.
I have something. I had finished Sunqua Vale, and I wandered into Kenya Province, and there's the Ari the Skull Wand Elementalist boss, and I wasn't really serious about vanquishing this area. I'd already finished Sunqua Vale. I was like, all right, checked out vanquishing, you know, it's pretty cool, kind of done for the night. And as soon as I got into his group, he pretty much annihilated my party in an instant. So that was a blast. Pun unintended. You like that? You like that?
Beautiful. Beautiful.
Before I really started thinking about vanquishing in a serious manner, like, I have to get this done methodically, I'm going to go through every single area in order, which I later abandoned because, yeah, that just wasn't realistic for me. We went into Palasia and I and a few others from the Alliance. We went into, what was it, the Eternal Grove, I think, and I went with my Necromancer playing, you know, the Minion Master. And we just got to one point where there was just, like, this one group of Wardens, and then there was a group of other stuff. I think it was like the Stone Scale Keating and the Dragon Moss and the Undergrowths, and just for some reason, it's like, oh, I'll walk in and you know, oh, minions. Oh crap, I was so caught up making minions. Oh, hi guys. Yeah, the minions are going wild, and I just got to a point where with the death penalty, luckily one of the party monks had a candy cane shard or a candy cane to help offset some of the death penalty. But it got to a point where people were running in, and they just, you know, it just got to a point where I kept dying, and I was like, okay, I think I'm going to hang back over here, far away from an area we had just come from, and yeah, we're going to pull, and I'm not going to make the same mistake of running in going, oh, look, I'll just raise minions and then die. So we have all these minions running around killing everyone, repeatedly.
I'm sorry, I don't know how to follow that.
Minions gone wild repeatedly. Well, what happened was I kept dying, and every time I died, the minions are no longer under control. It got to a point where even some of the same minions were killing me repeatedly, just because you had the Warden's brain is fried.
It would just be better if it was. It would just be better if it was the whole spring break minions gone wild.
Yeah, one time for spring break, we went down to the Eternal Grove, like. And we went around vanquishing, and instead of, you know, weekend of vanquishing, it turned into minions gone wild. It was crazy. Minions everywhere, man. Going
minions
wild, killing people.
Bikinis.
You'll be surprised what these flesh golems do when we put them together in a room alone. Oh,
watch out.
I don't want to see that.
Watch out for the rice wine.
That's great.
It's just when the jagged horrors come in.
The
okay, I'm not happy.
The Wait. Shambling horrors, bear all.
We take a shambling horror, we add some rice wine, we throw in a creme brulee, and let's see what happens.
It's like the real minions.
And along came a black moa.
Does that replace the goat? That would totally replace the goat. It's got a spike collar and everything. It's all set up and ready.
That's because the black moa is more evil and more metal than a regular moa.
It's into S&M.
Of course, the moa's already got the collar. Well, on that happy note, I think we're going to draw this to a close. So thank you, everyone, for hopping online and talk about this. For everybody out there on Guildcast.
So there you have it. Now go out and vanquish some foes. Wait, not yet. I'm not done talking. The next episode, as I mentioned last time, will be the call-in show concerning how non-gamers view your Guild Wars playing. This includes family and friends, or whoever you have in your life who might not really understand what this whole Guild Wars thing is all about. A few people have also asked me if they can send me their stories via email, and I can read them on the show, which is fine with me if you want to do that, as well as if you want to record your stories in MP3 form and then send them to me. That way you can maybe, if you're a little nervous about talking, you can edit yourself, you know, you can record yourself and edit yourself, and that would be fine with me too. I'm mainly just concerned with hearing your experiences however you can get them to me. Also, a quick note on the state of the Guildcast Guild. As of last week, I officially stepped down from my guild leader position of Guildcast Listeners United. I handed the reins over to Lysander, who we've heard on the show several times before, and who he's certainly the best candidate for the job, I think. He's already actually started doing more for the guild than I've done in months and months myself, so it's working out pretty good so far. And then just a few days ago, I actually proceeded to step two in my plans, and I've actually left the guild altogether. I'm not even a member anymore. I'm not in the alliance at all. This is not completely a reflection on the state of the guild as I left it. You know, there were no angry words, and I wasn't fed up or anything. I didn't go storming out, but it's more so a personal journey of mine to seek out something in a guild that I've always wanted but wasn't really finding with my own guild. It might sound funny, but I can't really get what I want out of a guild if I'm the leader or if it's gotten to the point that Guildcast Listeners United had gotten to, or such a large guild. I'm not really a large guild kind of person. But anyways, yeah, enough of that. At first, I wasn't really even going to discuss much about this whole topic because I consider the guild business separate from the podcast business. And all of you listeners out there, you know, thousands of listeners out there who aren't part of the guild, I feel bad that you have to sit through this. But, well, Lysander said he didn't really mind if I made a little announcement regarding the changes so that he can kind of get the PMs directed to him regarding guild business. So, for now, the application process is still the same. Where you send a blank email to join@guildcast.com, and that's if you're interested in joining. And then if you'd like to talk to the new guild leader, he can be reached at Lysander, Lysander, @guildcast.com. So that's about it then. If you'd like to reach me, I'm at Sean@guildcast.com. That's Shawn. And check out the contacts page on the main guildcast.com website for more ways to get in touch with both Lady Sinea and myself. Now, this includes, take note, that there's a new voicemail number, which is changed from the old one. And also, don't forget to check out virginworlds.com and the new collective idea that I've talked about before that I'm now a part of. Go to virginworlds.com, check out what the collective is all about. I'm still getting into the fit of things, and you know, we're still ironing a few details out, and this is still going to take a little while, as I mentioned before. But just go ahead and check out Virgin Worlds, see what it's all about. Who knows, if you got an idea for a podcast that you'd like to start out concerning MMOs, maybe the collective is for you. And as always, be sure to tell your friends and tell your guildmates about guildcast.com.
Do you want us to give our real names or our in-game names?
I'd say go with in-game names for now.
Which one?
Yeah.
Choose the one that strikes your fancy the most.
Strikes my fancy. I like that.
Oh, it was awesome. Even if I didn't make sense half the time.